It's one thing to listen to doom and gloom about food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation. It's quite another thing to hear practical, immediately actionable advice from experts who can help you reduce the fear, anxiety, and burden of these problems.
Tune in now to the Surviving Hard Times podcast from the Finding Genius Foundation with Richard Jacobs. Before we begin, a note from our sponsor. I'm Richard Jacobs, Executive Director of the nonprofit Finding Genius Foundation and host of the Finding Genius podcast. In late 2016, I was rear-ended at 65 miles an hour by a truck on the highway, which sent me off-road into a ditch. The impact of the collision gave me a concussion and other injuries. At the hospital, a CT scan showed that I had thyroid nodules, which turned out to be cancer. It was then, when I had a biopsy in my neck, that I realized even if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't want a second or a third biopsy due to the pain and the invasiveness of it. And appointments at that time for thyroid experts were 3 to 6 months out, and I was worried about dying now, even if that was irrational. So because of this, I've decided to raise money to conduct a literature review on steroids, on the causes of anxiety and depression, a condition that affects well over 50 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide. Our goal is to create a codex, a guide, that reveals all possible treatments for anxiety and depression for people that live with the condition, or for loved ones that have it, as my wife and my son do. To find out more about our fundraiser, visit findinggeniusfoundation.org and click on Current Initiatives. And now, to our guest. Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast, sponsored by the Finding Genius Foundation.
I have Dawn Gallup. She's at Number 9 Farms. They're on YouTube as well, Dawn Gallup of 9 Farms. She's a mom to, 6 boys and 3 girls, and she's been canning produce pretty much her whole life at a farm. They have 30 acres of land where they have goats, bees, and eggs, and they get meat from their farm. So it sounds like an amazing operation, and we're going to talk about it today. So Dawn, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
If you would, tell me about what you've been doing this, I guess, for at least 30 years. What got you into doing homesteading and ranching and farming and all this stuff you do?
Well, it all started, me and my husband moved to North Carolina. He was originally from North Carolina, and the farm... We moved on a farm, and it was an old house from the late 1700s, and it was very cold, and there was lots of old barns. So I started keeping goats and chickens and pigs, and it just was a dream, basically, because I grew up in the city, and I began starting then, and that was in 1992. But we didn't know that, like, what we did. We grew a garden. We didn't know it was called homesteading. We didn't know any of that. We just, did what we could to survive.
Right. I don't know. What are some of the lessons learned you've had from chickens and goats? And maybe let's start with the goats.
Well, the goats, you make sure you have, as my husband always says, I got to put the cart before the horse. So right. I would not have the proper, fencing, things like that. And I would get these goats, and then my husband would be like, okay, now I've got to build something. So the whole theory is that is you've got to have, somewhere for them to be, some kind of building, shelter of some sort first, before you jump in.
Was the theory like, I'll get the goats and my husband will figure out what to do with them?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
What was it like in your mind? Secretly,
yes.
Right?
Yes. And then I got the pigs one time, and there was nowhere for these pigs to be. And I'm like, oh, I'll just cuddle them all up, Bruce. They'll be fine. And that didn't go over well.
Husband, in his mind, he was like, here she goes again. And I get it. Like, my feeling just from what you said so far is that you're very spontaneous, and your husband's probably more of a planner. And he, he runs behind you sometimes, helping to plan after the fact of the things you jump into spontaneously. But that's just like it.
Yeah, that is so true.
That's okay. I'm the same way with my wife, but it's reversed. I'm the more spontaneous one and she's the planner. So it happens in a lot of relationships.
Yeah, it works.
I guess going back to the goats, I've never kept any. So what are, for people that are interested in keeping them, what's the benefits and what are some of the challenges of doing so?
Well, when I first got the goats, they just basically ran wild. For some reason, if somebody drove up with a blue car, they would jump on the blue car. No other car drove in the driveway. I don't know if the blue was like the color that they were attracted to. They literally would climb on whoever's car it was. And so they like to eat all your roses. They like to eat all your plants. So you make sure you have that structure. And once you have them in the, you know, pasture, they're perfectly fine. They come to, they, as soon as they see you, they want treats. As soon as you come in, they want to eat. And now milking, when you're first training them, you'll always want to have like the little, the with the mom. So that way at first they kind of want to, you know, learn from mom that they're, what they're doing. So that was a challenge at first, because I had some of them that weren't basically trained, as so to speak. And it took me a while to like get them used to it. But then once, and they love corn, and a lot of people like that's their treat. So if you would put the corn in the whole corn in the little cup, and they would come right in because they wanted that corn.
What are goats like compared to dogs? Are they smarter, stupider? Do they have different personalities? Like what are they like?
Well, the goats, they are kind of like dogs in some way. I mean, I guess you could say, like, some of the customers I had, they would put clothes on them. They would put diapers on them, and they would send me pictures, because I would sell some of the goats that were, you know, because I would have too many, and my husband wouldn't, you know, he's like, oh, we can't keep feeding all these goats. And as far as, you know, I loved them so much that I didn't want to, you know, call them or anything. So, or right. Use them for meat. I do the chickens though, and the quail.
But what, so did you milk them? Like what kind of, were they just pets to you, or yeah, you didn't want to use it for meat, but what, did you milk them or what'd you do?
I did. I milked them. And it's such a bond for with milking that you have, I mean, I don't know. It just like relaxes you. Just have a connection with them. And when you're sitting there like milking, kind of like lay your head a little against them, and you're just, you know, enjoy the process.
Now, okay, some so days they were good for milking. I've heard some people use them to clear brush or clear space, you know, like a lawn. They like to eat grass and things like that. Like what other uses have you found for the goats?
Well, they do. But you know, honestly, like in the woods, where like if I needed something cleared, if I put the chickens out there, the chickens would actually get in there and clear, like get the, you know, the ground tilled up and things like that. The pigs will do the same thing. The goats, but yeah, people always said you could rent them out and things like that to clear the area. But yes, they do.
Oh, interesting. How do they interact with other animals? Are they friendly to them, or are there certain ones they don't like? Or?
Well, there's always the dominant one in the herd. So it just appears that way. They'll like you, what you want to do when you feed them, you want to have them like each to their own little bowl, because if not, like one that's the dominant one will always attack the others and, you know, basically like buck them and things like, so they couldn't eat. But we kept the boys separate and of course the girls separate. And then like, if it was mating time, I would usually bring the boy or the buck to the female. And, but that usually you could tell they were in heat because the tail would wag, the female's tail would wag. And of course the boy would let you know. And a lot of people don't know this, but they will urinate on themselves. So the males,
why would they do that?
Because they want you to know that they're fertile, and they take and do this kind of weird way that you move their jaw. And it's like, I can't explain it, but they move their jaw like that. And they've wet themselves all in their face. And it says, hey, I'm fertile.
Wait, do the males pee on the females to mark them, or they pee on themselves? What do you mean?
They take their head and bend their head down and to their private area. And they basically urinate on their face.
Weird.
Because yeah, I know. And I guess because they're saying, hey, this, I'm available. I know.
Oh, to show that the females will do that, to show they're available to the males?
Yes. So that's what I mean. It's like if the female was in heat, and of course she's over there wagging her tail, he's over there spraying himself with his urine and doing his jaw in he like tilts his head back. And he kind of like moves his jaw out, and it just says, hey, I'm ready. I'm here. A lot of people don't know that, you know, because they think that the boys, you know, oh, I can just have this boy and he won't do this. But yes, you can weather them and not have that problem.
Yeah, that's really very strange behavior. Do they have other strange behaviors?
Not really that I can think of, right? I mean, you know, all of them have their own personality. So you've got ones that are more, you know, a lot more friendly. Oh, you've got ones that want to take all the snacks, the treat, the ones who want to hog all the hay.
Yeah, anytime I've seen animals, it doesn't matter what kind of animal it is, fish, goats, dogs, there's always a greedy one who just wants all the food and tries to hog it all.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
You know, the shy ones and stuff like that. There's always these different personality types.
That is exactly true. Even the chickens do the same thing.
Yeah, it's weird. We had a dog named Loki, and his whole life was about food, just constantly, you know. So whenever we'd see an animal that would do that, we'd say, oh, that's a Loki stingray, or that's a Loki goat, or that's a Loki whatever.
That's exactly right. Would, you know? Yes, you are so true.
Funny. That's really funny. So so the goats, like what did you, again, you milk them, but what else did they do around the homestead to help out? Did they just hang out and exist and eat things, or did, you know, they provided milk, or like what else did you do with them that was useful to the homestead or to you?
Well, you know, I would move them around sometimes and, you know, change rotational grazing. As far as other than that, like I've used the milk for the soap and I did cheese. So the cheese. See, I say this in the past tense because I no longer have the goat. Well, nothing happened. I've sold my farm and now I'm living in a new farm in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Oh, okay. So you may get them back or you may not, or what's your plan with them?
Yes, I'm almost coming on a year that I've been here. And yes, I do plan on, I have 7 acres of field, open pasture up there in the front of the land.
Nice. So goats, you can get milk from them, which is great, and make cheese and all kinds of other stuff. And then you said people would buy them. So was there any benefit or money in raising them and selling them? You know, do people eat them, or they just keep them as pets, or what do they do?
Yes, they do. People do eat them. There was a lot of people that would want them for that purpose. And then there was other ones that just bought them to raise on their homestead. And I had ADA, American Dairy Association, Oberhasli dairy goats. So they were registered. They would have their ears tattooed. And let's see, I made the soap. And I was making a lot of soap, and you can make caramels. I mean, you use your milk for everything. My kids drank it. I made macaroni and cheese. I mean, whatever I needed milk, we had goat milk. And I make the best yogurt from the goat milk that you've ever tasted. I'm telling you.
That's awesome.
I know.
How much would they produce? Was it like ton? I mean, how many goats for a family? What's the ratio of goats per family member?
So one goat, like I'm just going to give you one goat as an example. So one goat could have as much as a gallon. And a lot of people will do, I only milked once a day, but you can milk twice a day. And of course, the more that you would stimulate, so production, you would go out, you know, and stimulate. And then if I kept doing it, I could get more. So it's like, cause that's what the baby would need. So that would provide them with more milk. So if it you know, stimulates the more production.
Same in people. No difference, it sounds like, you know?
Yes, exactly. So if you got twins, you know, or whatever, it would be, you would produce more milk.
And the expression, milking them for all they're worth, came to mind. But I know you wouldn't do that. That's not healthy.
What was that?
There's an expression called milking it for all it's worth. But I know you
Yes. Yeah, as my husband always says, the cash cow, whatever. So same kind of reference.
Okay. What kind of goats work for people to have, you know, in this capacity, and which ones are not recommended?
There's like, there's a bunch of different dairy goats. Okay. Like, I honestly, I can't even think of all of them right now. Nubians, Sayon, But there's also Kiko, which is the meat goat. A lot of people use them for meat goats. But anyways, like my husband always says, any goat's a meat goat.
That's funny. Yeah, even I've had goat before, and even when it's really well prepared, there's like one tiny, you know, minuscule shred of meat, and it's like 8 million bones. So for me, goat's like not very, I don't know. It's not like chicken at all. So I can see why your husband may say every goat's a meat goat for many reasons. But even then, it's like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a great thing to eat or a hard thing to eat.
Yeah, I know. And like I said, we didn't use them for our meat purposes at all. They were strictly pets and goat milk.
Okay. And you mentioned pigs. It's okay. Let's talk about them. Like what kind of pigs and, you know, all the same questions. Like what do they do, et cetera?
Well, the pigs basically eat a lot. I'm not like really the best person for the pigs, but we had the pigs for my kids to show the pigs, and we would that's the only reason we had the pigs. And it, but with the meat, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we did that a long time ago. We haven't had pigs in a few years.
Okay. Well, what about chickens? Were you really skilled with the chickens? Did you do a lot with them? Or
yes.
If not, what animal did you work with a lot?
Well, the chickens, yes, I absolutely work a lot with the chickens. I've had the chickens off and on since 1992. And I immediately, when I got here for my new homestead, I was, you know, trying to get chickens ordered immediately. And so I could start all over, basically. But yeah, the chickens are absolutely, as most people say, the gateway to the rest of the animals. So,
oh, really? Why is
yeah,
that? Are chickens pretty easy to keep? And like, first of all, what kind of chickens are out there? I'm sure there's like eating chickens and egg laying chickens. And
yes, so I have meat birds. They're usually Cornish cross. Those are the ones I get from McMurray Hatchery every year. I've had great success with them. I have I've had all kinds of different chickens over the years: Red Star, Buff Orpingtons, Wyandottes. Honestly, I've had every chicken probably, and I've even what I call the barnyard chicken, the ones that you have mated, and basically you get whatever mix or breed, you know, whatever you want to call it, the barnyard chicken.
Okay. So what's important to know about keeping chickens? You got to have a house for them. Like what's,
well,
you know, are they okay with the cold or the heat, or like what have you learned about them?
Okay, so like the cold ones, when you want to get ones if you're in a cold climate, is you want to have one that doesn't have a long comb, because that way it doesn't get frostbit. So you want to get ones that with the shorter, you know, comb at the top. And it, like another thing, like I could tell you too, because I've been selling at the farmer's market off and on basically for over 10 years. And a lot of the things, people always want brown eggs. Well, the brown egg layers were mostly what they would say from the north, because they mostly had the combs that could handle the cold. And then like the leghorns, which would produce the white egg, they would be more southern. So more of the southern folks would have chickens like that, you know, could tolerate heat. So that's one of the reasons that you would, you know, pick and choose the right type of bird for your homestead.
What do you mean the comb? Like, how would that help?
The little top, the red part at the top of the head. So the little comb that's at the top.
Right, but that doesn't cover like most of their body. Why would that be a factor in them tolerating the cold or not?
Me and my husband have come to the convincing that their feet can take like anything, because they really will go through any type of broken ice, everything, and they just stand there. But what it does is it'll get frostbit, because we get temperatures here in the negatives, and you don't want to have it, because that comb will get frostbit. Just like so it's actually like an extra appendage type thing that would be sticking off, and that way
it'll be hard for the chicken's body to bring enough heat to a large comb that was hanging off of it, as opposed to a small one.
Right, okay. Exactly.
So the hardiest part of the chicken is the feet. They're pretty much indestructible, like you said.
Yes. And some of the things, like they get like bumblefoot, that is like a, an infection, like, cause they're walking through dirt and everything and say they got a little scratch on it or something. And then it turns into like a boil, and for the best way for me to describe it. And basically you have to go in there and you have to like lancelet and then squeeze out all the bad stuff, the pus.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. Their feet are really indestructible. So, I mean, that only happens every now and then, like maybe twice in all these years I've had it.
Okay.
So that's, so
for people that don't know, like how many eggs do the egg laying hens produce and for how long?
One usually a day, or like sometimes you can like research the type of breed that you have and say, you know, average, there's even apps too for like, you want to count the eggs that you have, but there's, on average a day, one a day. And then maybe the next day that hen won't lay, but then, you know, everybody else does. There was a time that I sold, I had 300 chickens and I sold eggs for basically for a living.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
What was that like? What, did you have different kinds of eggs to sell? Like, what did people, how did they react to the eggs? What did they say to you?
This was around 2014 and stuff. And I had blue eggs. I'd have the green, the olive. Those were the Americanas, or most people call them the Easter eggers. I would have the white eggs too. I'd have the brown and all different colors of browns. And sometimes there'd be little speckles on them. And I would just mix them. But then you would have customers that would want the eggs to be all brown or all white, or all, like some of them would say, I just want blue eggs. So I would let them, you know, pick and choose. But then I got to the point where a lot of them would only pick the largest eggs. So I had to stop doing that. Cause not when you, have, farm eggs, that they're never like perfect. They're beautiful in every way, but you know what I mean? If you're
people
used to
people will pick the best ones, and then the later ones might complain, right?
Right. These eggs are too small, because say you have a pullet, the pullet's only going to lay an egg that's much smaller. And then usually after the molting process has gone through, which is usually say maybe the second year, and the molting will come on, and then they won't lay any eggs. And then you've got this little chicken running around with hardly any feathers.
Oh, so the chickens only lay eggs for what, like a year and a half, and then never again? Or what happens next?
No. They can lay eggs sometimes up to 9 years, as long as you know, they're healthy and everything. And they've, but yes, they can go that long. But usually what you can tell, like from the feet, if the feet are light colored, the feet could be an indication that they're no longer laying, and also the comb. So if their comb is usually bright red, then usually that's an indication that they are laying. Plus their vent would be dry if they're not laying.
So they go through a period where they stop laying for how long?
It usually lasts a couple of months. Usually it's in the fall. So that time of year anyway, the days are shorter. So the egg production drops off a lot. So that's another factor too that can help. So, I mean, and then I usually just give them a little bit extra food. They love mealyworms. They love the soldier flies, things like that. I just buy the big dehydrated bag at Tractor Supply.
Oh, and they love soldier flies. Some people I heard cultivate soldier flies to feed them to the chickens, and they get kitchen scraps and all that. Like, what have you found is a good mixture of things to give to a chicken?
Everything. Everything, honestly. They say you're not supposed to, they don't ever touch limes or oranges. So any citric type thing, which is another thing they say don't put in your compost, but they do not touch those. But honestly, every single thing that is edible, because like I'd have customers ask me that, you know, what do you feed them? And I would say, well, I do give them food scraps. And, you know, some people didn't want that. They think that they only are supposed to be pasture raised with eating. They think they're only supposed to eat grass, and they're omnivores. And that right there, they've got to have both. And people don't realize that, when they really don't. It's unbelievable how some people don't know those things.
What are some of the real healthy things to give to the chickens as opposed to not healthy? Like if you wanted to optimize their diet and egg laying, what would you give them?
You would want to give them a lay-in mash so that they love whole corn too. But that's another thing too. A lot of people don't want the corn in their diet, but I mix in like peas, split peas. Those are some of the things that, and I mix in the wintertime, you want to give them the whole corn and the black sunflower seed, because that way it provides them with a little bit of oil and it helps keep them warm. Cause basically what they do is they'll spread their wings. You'll see them like spread their wings. And also you might see this with the buzzard. They'll spread their wings so they can absorb heat into their body. And that way they can store the heat.
Okay. What if you're going to eat your chickens? What kind of chickens should you get? When can you eat them? And how do you fatten them up so they're delicious?
Okay. So there's a more protein type feed for that. And you'll, it's basically meat bird is what it's called, meat bird. And the meat bird is what I would feed them. And you want to have like, we do chicken tractors. Remember how we were talking about earlier about a house or something? And we do chicken tractors. But now this property here does have a stationary coop, but it was already here. So my husband and me, we had already said that when we started the new homestead that we did not want any stationary, you know, chicken coop, because it's best to be able to move them. That way they're on new grass every day. They're also, you're providing for the land and you're providing a much healthier bird.
Okay. So any other, egg laying and meat, is there any other interesting uses of the chickens? You know, since you said their feet are very hardy, are they able, and they're good at cleaning, I guess, various things out of a field. Like what other uses do they have to help around the farm?
Well, providing you with eggs, of course, providing you with meat. They clean. Okay. Now the manure, that is a whole nother thing as far as like, that's great to use. And we could talk about some of that as far as like using it in the garden for composting type thing.
Oh, yeah, the chicken manure.
Right.
So is that pretty easy to collect? Do they produce a lot of it? And is it good for the garden?
Well, I got a lot of controversy over that for my point of view, because say you're putting straw into your coop or wherever your box is, whatever. Well, most of the straw that unless, you know, I'm sure there are some that is sprayed with Grazon. Okay. And Grazon gets into the straw. You put the straw into your coop. Then you use that straw to put into your garden. And then you've got Grazon basically into your soil. And
what's Grazon? What is that?
Grazon is a weed control. And the farmers. The large farmers, you know, as far as like the ones that would be doing straw, they are spraying it to keep the weeds out of the straw. So, and the Grazon, it is terrible. That's all I can tell you is I've had this problem happen. This is what happened to me in my high tunnel. And I did not know, because I didn't know, you know, I was using it. And then all of a sudden my plants weren't doing well. And I was like, what's going on? And that's when I would call out the professionals, as I call them.
So do you have to use straw in the chicken coop, or can you use other bedding and stuff?
Yeah, we use the pine. You don't want to use cedar. That can get into their nostrils and things, and that's not good for them. As far as like the pine is what I use. So the pine shavings, they're non-toxic. They're clean. They're not as, you have to use a lot more. And also you can use that to like, say, insulate your beds, like planting your garlic.
Is it possible to get hay that hasn't been sprayed, or is it hard to find?
It's really hard. And it's really hard. I mean, it might not be for others, but I haven't found one yet. And of course they don't tell you this as a homesteader, or you go to pick the hay up. You don't think of, hey, this hay might have something straw might be toxic, because there is a difference between hay and straw.
Oh, what's the difference?
Well, the hay is for eating and the straw is for bedding, is always what I say. And the hay is usually green, or at least had a green tinge to it, and it seems to be a little finer.
Can you make your own hay or own straw? How would you do it?
You could. You'd have to plant it, go from there. It would be a process.
Like some people do compost, maybe it's worthwhile to do straw. I don't know. If you have a lot of chickens.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah, definitely. I did that. That's what I did for years. And so what I would do from the coop that I had, I would move the straw from the inside, and then I would move it outside because I had like a run in the front. I would let them out of the run, but I still, that was kind of like their resting area, I guess you would say. They go in there and do their baths, their dirt baths, dust bath.
Oh, really? Oh, the chickens would want to take a dust bath?
Yes. That
like
helps
a chinchilla?
Like a chinchilla, yes. Exactly.
So what do? You have like a box with a certain kind of dust or dirt in it, and they like to go in there and roll around?
Oh, well, most of the time you can do that. Like that's what I call the Instagram chickens, because like they've got this perfect little life, and it's really not like that. It's not like that with this beautiful little coop, and it, cause it's going to get dirty really fast. There was times I did curtains and stuff like that just because it was cute, because I wanted that Instagram chicken.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
So what are some of the challenges with keeping chickens?
Well, they don't have any, I guess you want to say, they don't care where they poop. So if you have them where they're just running around, they will eat up all your grass. So the part will turn from basically beautiful green or whatever, even if it's weeds, it'll be to dirt. Those are some of the things that challenges.
Oh, but can you put them in an area for one day? Will they like strip it bare in one day? Or what if you
graze the meat
them
for,
in different areas?
Yes. If you have like a large area and you can move them about, yes, they it won't get as damaged. But in one day, meat birds, it's depending on how many's in the chicken tractor, if they can destroy the grass in one day.
Oh, wow.
In that little chicken tractor, say whatever size it is, you know, by 10. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. The size,
What's a chicken tractor?
Well, the chicken tractor is a mobile unit, basically, that some people have like chickshaws. I think different names for them. But there's basically, you have a structure that is enclosed, and then you move it each day onto a new piece of grass. And you literally can tell after it's done, it's almost like a train track. If green, beautiful grass after they're done, like, you know, like a couple of days later, where you can see the green grass starting to come back. So it fertilizes beautiful.
Are they good for getting rid of weeds then? Like, how else could they be used to help out?
Yeah, they get rid of weeds. Absolutely. They definitely will clean a spot up. Like I told you about the woods. I mean, they will go in there and that the old leaves, everything will be tilled up, turned up. They're amazing.
Huh. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And any other difficulties in raising them? I heard like every creature wants to eat them. So you got to watch out for.
Yes. So that's another thing. So hawks is another thing. Eagles, they say even eagles will do that. I have not had a problem with the eagles. I've only had issues with hawks. And usually they come on days when it's cloudy. And that's because that way you cannot see the reflection. Because usually if the rooster's out, which is a benefit of having a rooster, because they do protect. And that's the rooster will warn the hens, and they will run to a safe place. Yeah, they do.
How does the rooster see the hawks?
I guess because he's always watching after, as my husband says, he's watching after his girls. So, yeah. he's keeping an eye out for them. And what the rooster, like he does is he comes in and he's scratching and stuff thinking. Cause like he, even when I, not all of them, but like you'll have maybe one or two that'll be kind of funny. And a lot of people don't have roosters together, but I've never had no trouble with the roosters. Like I have always had plenty of roosters. And so like he comes in and he's like pecking the ground and he's really not eating anything. He's kind of like warning you, hey, don't mess with my girls. So
become very possessive over like how many?
Yeah, they're very protective.
Hey, do the roosters set up like harems where they have X number of hens that are theirs?
Yeah, basically they do. So like if you say I have like seven roosters, so this rooster might have three hens with him, and they travel about on the property, and basically they've got a few, you know, like this one might have three or four. It is so true.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, do they call in the morning? You know, like
oh, yes. And that's the thing too. A lot of people think they only do it like when the sun comes up. At 2 o'clock in the morning, you can hear that. It doesn't matter the time.
Oh, do they do it like all night long, or when do they do
it? No, not all night long, but they will do it sometimes at random times. And one time when my mom was here, she said I had sent her a picture of the rooster. And when I sent her a picture, she says, I hope he's gone when I come back, because she said he called all night.
Oh, no. How come that people think that they just call in the morning then?
I guess because when we were kids, if you think about it, we saw Looney Tunes and the rooster always crowed when the sun was coming up.
Hmm. Weird. Interesting.
Yeah.
So what do you do with the rooster? I mean, the roosters are good to protect the hens and all that. So how do they see hawks? Do they, they just look up and look around? They're always surveilling?
Well, I don't actually see them like looking up, but I don't know if it's because like most of the time when they're out and about, he's just kind of like looking on, you know, like he's watching the girls as they're pecking. And then I guess he sees them. I don't know, but I have been out there and I've been out there and literally came at the hawk myself, not like attacked it or anything, but I was trying to save one of my bantams, and he had already pecked her eyes out before it was too late. Yeah.
So that's what hawks do. They kill them and then take them away, or do they just, are they strong enough to just lift them away and fly away with them?
No, I didn't see that happen, but most of the time, like a possum usually is the head's cut off, and sometimes you don't see the predator. Opossums, raccoons, those are some of the things. I've even had a fox one day right in broad daylight run into my coop.
Oh, jeez.
And I've had snakes too. I've had plenty of snakes, and the snakes, I've even had them where they're curled up eating the eggs. I had my husband, like one of them was a black snake, but a lot of times in the South, that the copperheads.
I guess everyone wants to eat chickens. Everybody.
Yeah. Everything. Or their eggs.
Huh. Okay. Well, very good. You know, thanks for telling me about all these things. I don't really know much about them, but for people that want to find out more about your activities, should they go to your YouTube channel, or where can people find out more about you?
Yeah. On my YouTube channel, Don Gallup at Number 9 Farms.
Okay. And Gallup is G-A-L-L-O-P or U-P?
That's O-P. I always say
like a horse galloping.
Yes, that's what I say. Gallop like a horse.
Okay, not gallop like the pole that they take every year.
No, no.
Okay. Well, very cool. Well, yeah. No, it's been great to talk to you, and thank you for all your wisdom. You know, your actual hands-on wisdom with all these creatures.
Yeah, you didn't want to talk about greenhouses.
Before you stop listening, ask yourself, what are one or two useful things you heard on this podcast that can help you overcome food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation? Please like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about their Surviving Hard Times podcast. We're all going to need help now and in the near future.